Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
From KQED.
I got a lot of accents. You'd be surprised. I'm from New York. I went to school with some Long Islanders. Long Island. Long Island.
This is live election coverage from the California Newsroom. I'm Marisa Lagos in San Francisco.
Well, thank you very much. They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one.
Both President Biden and former President Trump overwhelmingly win their party's primary in California and most other Super Tuesday states. Congresswoman Barbara Lee won't be on the November ballot as Adam Schiff advances to a November runoff in the U.S. Senate race.
It's been quite a phenomenal multiracial, multigenerational, progressive movement that we have put together throughout the state. And I just want to thank everyone for their help.
And will voters embrace Governor Gavin Newsom's massive bond measure to build housing and treatment for people suffering from mental illness?
Let's deal with these encampments. Let's see a reduction in the street population.
Stay with us for live coverage of California's primary election from the California Newsroom. This is live coverage of California's primary election from the California Newsroom. I'm Marisa Lagos here with Scott Schaefer at KQED and Austin Cross with LAist in Los Angeles. Well, the polls closed a little over an hour ago here on the West Coast, and unsurprisingly, former President Donald Trump and President Joe Biden are leading in their respective party primary contests. And Proposition 1, Governor Gavin Newsom's mental health housing ballot measure is leading in early returns. We're also watching a U.S. Senate contest here. This is the seat long held by the late Dianne Feinstein, and we have some calls in that race. That seat will not be held by a woman for the first time since 1992. Here with us this hour in studio are Debbie Meslow, a communications consultant who runs her own firm, Meslow Strategies, and Gil Duran, an independent journalist and co-founder of the Frame Lab newsletter with Dr. George Lakoff. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
You.
First, Scott, let's get some updates on that Senate race. What are we hearing?
Yeah, so the Associated Press has called it for Steve Garvey to come in second place. About an hour or so ago, they said Adam Schiff would be in the top two as well. So we're going to have a Schiff-Garvey runoff in November. This is the race Adam Schiff wanted. The polls, of course, have showed that he is, you know, far ahead of Garvey in a one-on-one matchup. This is bitterly disappointing for those who wanted a woman in that seat.
Right.
I mean, as you mentioned, Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer before her. They were there together for so many years, but Katie Porter and Barbara Lee falling short tonight by quite a large margin, and so it's going to be two guys running off in November. Steve Garvey couldn't have done it without, I think, Adam Schiff, fair to say, with his millions of dollars in advertising.
Right, and Austin Cross, you know, Katie Porter and Barbara Lee and Adam Schiff all had to not run again for their congressional seats. The Katie Porter seat down there in Irvine is another one we're watching. Can you give us an update on that race?
Sure, Marisa. Well, with about 46% of the votes in right now, Republican Scott Baugh, who's a former assembly member, and Democrat Dave Minn, who's a current assembly member, are really neck and neck with a little over 24,000 votes apiece. About 6,000 votes behind them right now is attorney Joanna Weiss. And look, this was a bruising race to say the least, right? I mean, in May, Minn was arrested for a DUI. That video was leaked. Weiss used it to make attack ads. Minn's campaign, meanwhile, targeted Weiss's husband and his work as an attorney for the Catholic Diocese of Orange County. So a lot of back and forth there right now, but top two, as it stands right now, Scott Baugh, Dave Minn. Joanna Weiss could still close that gap, though.
Yeah, it's looking hard, though. Debbie Meslow, I mean, you have worked for many women, including the late Dianne Feinstein. How are you feeling right now seeing that there will not be a woman in that runoff?
You know, I have to say that's tough. You know, I would have liked to have seen
a woman to continue to represent California. I think Boxer and Feinstein really brought, you know, when they came, as you recall, a state had never had two women represent them. So it was quite a moment for California. I remember, you know, just the absolute inspiration that Boxer and Feinstein gave to generations of women. And
yet Adam Schiff got endorsed by Boxer, by Nancy Pelosi, by a lot of women who broke those glass ceilings themselves. I mean, how do you think, assuming Steve Garvey can't pull off the impossible in November, I mean, what kind of senator would Schiff be?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that he has like a lot of institutional support, and he has gone around the state. He certainly has shown himself, I think, to have this popularity as he's coming in. And he did get the institutional support of most of, as you mentioned, Marissa, the California congressional delegation. Unfortunately, Porter did not enjoy that support. Also, with two women running in this.
Two progressive women.
That's right. You know, they cut the women's endorsement clubs. They cut the women's donors. And so that was a real challenge for Porter.
I mean, Gil Duran, also a former Dianne Feinstein staffer, didn't make that connection until you were both sitting in front of me. What does this mean? I mean, less than a quarter of voters in California are Republicans, although we have seen some no party preference voters come over and support, I mean, candidates of both parties, obviously. But is this going to be a contest the way you see it?
No. Congratulations to Senator-elect Adam Schiff. This is the least surprising outcome of any race, I think. This year, it was pretty clear, I think, to me at least, for most of the race, that he was in pole position, would have taken something really major to change that dynamic. And now, although some of our friends maybe in TV have to pretend like there's a race this year, it's pretty much over. We all know that. That's why Schiff pushed to have Garvey in the race with him. There's no way a Republican can win, so it'll be Schiff. Strategy worked out. I do think it's a bit cynical. I think it's kind of strange to spend millions of dollars to harden these Trumpy feelings that people have, or kind of keeping these people locked in a cult, but you can't argue that it's not an effective tactic. It does work.
Well, you wonder what that'll do to Democratic turnout in November as well.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, Biden, not a ton of enthusiasm, although maybe Trump will change that for Democrats. But, you know, when you have a race that's foregone conclusion, you know, I'm sure the polls will show that. It may be one less reason.
I want to bring in Melissa Menendez. She's a former Republican state senator and state director of the America First Policy Institute, as well as executive director of the America First California. Senator Menendez, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Marissa, for having me on. It's a very interesting night, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, tell us your reaction to Garvey making this runoff after a lot of spending on his behalf, essentially, by the Democrat in the race, Adam Schiff.
Yeah, I found it really interesting that, I mean, it's a great political strategy, obviously, but I did find it interesting that Katie Porter was so very upset about the strategy that Schiff deployed when I think she was deploying the same strategy for bumping up another Republican candidate. But that being said, I don't think anybody is necessarily surprised by these results, although I do robustly disagree with Gil's comment that people who vote for Trump are part of a cult.
Well, let's talk about Trump. He is now at about 74% of the votes. We are, you know, not anywhere near counting the millions of votes that will come in, but that is well enough to give him not just a win, but take all the delegates to the Republican convention this summer. Any surprise to you that Nikki Haley didn't do better here? We've seen she won Vermont, for example, tonight.
She did win Vermont, but I don't think anyone, Democrats or Republicans, are surprised by the vote count for former President Trump. I think we all saw this coming. It's, you know, going to be Biden-Trump 2.0, I guess. But, you know, there are a lot of, I mean, we saw this in the last election. There were a lot of people who voted for President Trump and will continue to do so. We have certainly some Democrats and no party preference folks who will be voting for him as well. How many, you know, we don't know, but I don't think anyone was surprised by this.
All right. That was Melissa Menendez, Republican former state senator and director for the America First Policy Institute here in California. Thank you so much for your time.
Anytime.
All right. And Scott, you're looking at a couple other races here. Any other updates you want to give us? I know that we are keeping an eye on the Central Valley congressional seat that David Valadao, Republican, holds.
Yeah, David Valadao, the Republican incumbent, doing well tonight, well ahead. And the risk there for Democrats is that the number two candidate there, whoever comes in second, could be another Republican. And Chris Matisse and Rudy Salas, the former assemblyman, Democratic assemblyman, are neck and neck, very, very close. And it'll probably be a couple of days before we know who the who that's going to be a runoff between in November.
So fascinating, since Chris Matisse is not as much of a name that we've all been talking about. But
and he's a MAGA Republican as well.
You never know. You've been listening to live election coverage from the California Newsroom. I'm Marisa Lagos in San Francisco. And we're going to continue our conversation here with me in studio, Debbie Meslow, communications consultant, and Gil Duran, independent journalist. I want to ask just in general, I mean, we've talked about the top lines, but what else are you all watching tonight? Gil, let's start with you.
I'm definitely watching the races in San Francisco and the East Bay, where you see these sort of billionaire, right-leaning, so-called moderates trying to push for power. And so far, it seems like the judges they're trying to take down in San Francisco are ahead.
And these are incumbent judges that were challenged kind of from the right, essentially.
Yeah, definitely. And seeing not a lot of surprises. I think this is just kind of an appetizer for what we're going to see in the battles coming up in November. I don't think we'll see any big surprises tonight in any of these races.
Debbie Meslow, what are you watching?
I appreciate that. Well, I love how we started with the Senate. I still can't believe we have a Republican as part of what we're going to see in the general race. We also lost two women out of the congressional, Marissa, as you mentioned. I'm also paying attention, of course, to the San Francisco ballot. As we know, the mayor has several initiatives up and looking to see how those fare tonight. Those are expected to pass. And then I'm looking at the District 16 race as well. Sam Liccardo,
glad you brought that up.
Joe Simidian, Evan Lowe, and Peter Dixon in that race, too. It's an interesting one to watch.
This is a congressional race, another seat long held by a woman here in the Bay Area, Anna Eshoo, and a lot of money spent in that race, a lot of Democrats. Austin Cross, I want to go to you down in L.A. before we take a break. Big district attorney's primary tonight, 11 people challenging the incumbent George Gascon. Do we know anything yet out of that race?
You know what? No clear results yet looking at the numbers, but I'm sure we'll keep watching those as the night goes on. But I'll also toss in what I'm watching right now, City Council District 14, Kevin DeLeon. We can talk about that at some point, but very interesting race right now.
Do we have any results on that yet?
You know what? He's currently in the lead, followed by Miguel Santiago. It's clear that there's an appetite for somebody other than him, for people who aren't really read in on this. There was a tape scandal in City Hall. Kevin DeLeon was there. Some of the people who were in that room with him, in that meeting with him, making some very racist remarks. Large calls for Kevin DeLeon to resign. He did not. He stuck around. He has campaigned hard right now, and he's coming in with about 29% of the vote. Obviously,
quite a change from 6 years ago when he was running on a statewide ballot for U.S. Senate, however.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Stick with us. We have way more to come. You have been listening to live election coverage from the California Newsroom. I'm Marisa Lagos with Scott Schaefer here at KQED in San Francisco and Austin Cross with LAist in Los Angeles. We'll be here. Stay tuned for more election coverage from NPR and the California Newsroom.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
This is live coverage of California's primary election from the California Newsroom. I'm Marisa Lagos with Scott Schaefer here at KQED and Austin Cross with LAist in Los Angeles. More than an hour after polls closed here in California, we are continuing to watch the results come in. And one of those races we're following closely is Proposition 1. This is the nearly $6.4 billion bond and policy measure that Governor Gavin Newsom and lawmakers put on the ballot, part of his agenda to tackle those really sticky intertwining issues of homelessness, mental health, and substance abuse. Scott, how are things looking in that race so far?
Well, they're looking pretty good. Proposition 1 is now ahead, 53% yes to 47% no. That is not as wide a margin, I think, as the governor would like. And of course, there are many, many ballots still to count. But, you know, the nature of this electorate being more conservative, older, more Republican, really, you have to think that the no side really benefited from the more conservative nature of the electorate. And, you know, it may well pass. Obviously, if it didn't, it would be a huge loss for the governor and people who would have benefited from this. But right now, it looks like it's the lead is pretty steady.
All right. I mean, Gilderin, you worked for former Governor Jerry Brown. Obviously, homelessness is a challenging issue for public elected officials at all levels of government. I mean, how important is this for Gavin Newsom to get this across the finish line?
It's pretty important for Gavin Newsom, and it's pretty important for California. I don't know what the no vote's all about. Everyone seems concerned about homelessness. We just want to leave mentally ill people in the streets. It's not really clear to me what a no vote would be based on unless people were just trying to punish the poorest and most vulnerable in order to send a message to Gavin Newsom. I have a lot of criticisms of Newsom, but something needs to be done, and Prop 1 seems like a really important first step. And if we're not going to do that, it's really not clear what we're going to do except watch this problem get worse and worse.
Yeah, I mean, Debbie Meslow, we all know the governor has national aspirations, whatever they may be after he leaves this office. Just put in context to us, like, how the homeless issue, substance abuse, mental health, like how that could play when he tries to take, you know, anything national.
Yeah, he absolutely has to address this, right? If you're looking to put yourself out there on national stage representing California, you've got to be able to talk about some positive and things that you did to try to address this. You can't see these tent cities in Los Angeles and San Francisco and hope to have a national run without pointing to some things that you tried to do to move the ball down the field. I mean, we remember from his mayor's time, his care not cash. This is something that he has been consistent on. However, you know, the problem is so big, as Gil was just mentioning, you know, this is a first step forward, but he absolutely needs to show progress on this issue.
All right. Well, I want to bring in Marisa Kendall from CalMatters. She has been following this as the homelessness reporter at our partner organization, and she joins us from Oakland. Marisa, welcome to Election Night coverage.
Thanks so much.
Well, you know, you just heard us talking about the importance of this. Can you just talk a little bit about how the governor campaigned on this, how he talked about this? I mean, it's important to note, to Gil's point, this passed unanimously in the state Senate, which, like, never happens in Sacramento.
Yeah, this has been a big part of Newsom's ongoing push to get encampments off the street. You know, we're seeing these massive encampments, just huge proliferations of unhoused people. And we're seeing a lot of people who, you know, are in the street and can't really take care of themselves, living in squalid conditions. And that's really been the cornerstone of Newsom's fight against homelessness. So he was really campaigning on this as a way to get people off the streets and get them into beds.
And I mean, I don't know how much you were out there talking to voters, but I'm curious, like, there wasn't a very organized campaign against this. Was the governor getting pushback on the campaign trail, or what do you make of the pretty tight results so far?
You know, there was a little bit of hesitancy from some sectors. It wasn't very loud. But I think there's a little bit of fear that, you know, this measure would fund some new mental health treatment beds. There's a little bit of fear among some disability rights advocates that some of those beds would be in locked facilities, that they would take away a patient's right to choose whether or not to be in treatment. And then the other portion of this measure would divert some funds away from other programs and divert them into housing for people who need mental health and substance abuse care. So there's some worry about what will happen to those programs where the funds are taken away from. And some counties are worried that they'll be able, that they won't be able to do as much to prevent people's mental health issues from becoming severe when some of that funding is diverted.
Yeah, well, can you just, before we let you go, I know that that concern is certainly out there, although I don't think we saw like a big campaign mounted by counties to oppose this. What's the response from the Prop 1 campaign? Like, what do they say that they can do with this money and policy change to make a dent in, you know, as we've laid out, some pretty intractable seeming problems?
Yeah, so they're promising, 6,800 new mental health treatment beds and about 4,300 new homes for people who need, you know, mental health and substance abuse support. So they're saying, you know, this could really make a dent in, providing services for some of the most vulnerable people who really need some help.
All right. That is Marisa Kendall, CalMatters homelessness reporter, joining us from Oakland. Thanks for your time this evening.
You're welcome.
I mean, Gil, Debbie, you guys hear this. You hear the concern about it taking away money from other programs. Like, Debbie, is that something that you think could be a political challenge for the governor later on?
I think that he's going to address that. Again, I think this is an issue he's been consistent on. As we all know, he's a policy wonk. I'm sure he's studied this inside and out. I mean, look, the number of homeless people in California has ballooned, as we all know. And so, again, I think that there's more upside to him taking this battle on than downside.
And Scott, want to check in with you. I don't know if there are any other races that we want to update folks on.
Yeah, there's an interesting congressional race. It's the seat currently held by Katie Porter, who, of course, ran for the U.S. Senate. And that was a race that she barely won 2 years ago. She vastly outspent Scott Baugh, the Republican. He's running again. He's got about 30% of the vote tonight. But Dave Minn, State Senator Dave Minn, has almost identical number of votes, about 24,000 each. So they are neck and neck. Joanna Weiss, the Democratic attorney, who had a very bitter, nasty battle in this primary with the other Democrat, is in third place with about 21%. There's another Republican in the race that has about 12%. So, you know, if this holds, and of course it is early, we have to keep saying that, a lot of ballots still to count. It looks like the Democrat will, Dave Minn, will get into that runoff with Scott Baugh and look, you know, could well be very competitive in November.
Yeah, and the other congressional race we're watching that kind of had Democrats sweating is in the Central Valley. This is Representative David Valadao's seat, one of only two Republicans who voted to impeach Trump after January 6th. He lost the seat a couple cycles ago, got it back. Very close race there. I mean, Gil, how important is this for Democrats to get someone into that runoff? We're seeing right now Rudy Salas, former Democratic Assemblyman, is in second place, but there was some concern because another Democrat's in that race and, you know, they could split the vote.
Yeah, they should have thought that one through a bit more carefully. I know there were some weird political dynamics there, but there's really no excuse for Democrats in California in 2024 to be losing congressional seats that they should be winning in races where they strategize a little better would be a no-brainer. You can't afford to be losing these seats. So I think it won't be the end of the world, but it'll be pretty embarrassing and hopefully teach people to do a better job of it next time.
Yeah, I mean, Debbie, this is something we saw a lot of hand-wringing about in recent weeks. They could not convince State Senator Melissa Hurtado, the other Democrat, to drop out. I mean, if Salas can keep this this lead above the other GOP contender, how good of a shot does he have in that district?
Well, you know, the opportunity to get back the majority of the House runs through California, right? And so everybody's looking at these races. And I personally do not support candidates who get in who have no opportunity to win whatsoever, and they just pull votes from these other candidates. So it certainly is a closely watched race tonight, and hoping that moderate Democrat can really pull it out.
All right. I want to turn back to L.A. We have Antonio Cerejito here from an LAist reporter at the George Gascon party down there in Los Angeles. Is that right? And she is covering this district attorney's race. Antonio, thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So what do we know so far? I know with a crowded field of a dozen candidates, it may take a while to figure out who's in the lead in that race.
Yeah, so District Attorney Gascon does have the most number of votes right now, but he would need 50% to flat out win, and it looks very likely that he will not get that and that there will be a runoff. And it looks like Hochman is in second place and could be potentially, at this point, it's still very early, could be the other opponent.
And this is Nathan Hochman, who's a former Republican turned independent, ran for attorney general a few years ago. I mean, was he one of the biggest spenders in that race?
Yes, he's been spending a lot of money. And actually, Gascon told me today when I interviewed him that he has noticed how much others are raising when he also has a full-time job. And he said that he has not been able to raise as much.
Interesting. You know, a few years ago when he won that seat, we saw national progressive groups come in, support him. That money has not flowed this time. I mean, is incumbency sort of the strength here? Because you have had a lot of criticisms of, you know, the way he's led that office in addition to his progressive policies.
Yeah, I think he's the most recognizable name. And so that is definitely an advantage for him at this moment. And actually, today, when I was at the polls talking to voters, many of them told me they are not voting for Gascon, but they didn't actually tell me who they were voting for. So it feels very much like a referendum on how his time as district attorney has been thus far.
Yeah. But as you say, he still does have that vote. I mean, what can we expect from a runoff if it indeed ends up being Gascon and one of these more conservative challengers?
I mean, I think it's of real national interest because he is one of the, you know, more progressive DAs that was elected. And there was this movement nationally to see if we could enact criminal justice reform through the district attorney's office. And so it'll see if that messaging is still compelling to voters then.
All right. That is Antonia Cerejido. She is an LAS reporter down in Los Angeles. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And can I just chime in
really
quickly?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you. You've been watching this race. You live down there, Austin. I mean, what has it been like living this?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? It's so interesting that Nathan Hochman, you know, coming in at number two right now, below him, a slew, at least 10 other people, 10 other challengers. I would say about 9 of them are kind of more law and order sort of personalities, coming in a lot harder than George Gascon, with the exception of Jeff Chemerinsky, who some challengers have described as like a mini Gascon due to his positions. He's an ex-federal prosecutor. He's running as a moderate. But honestly, looking at these numbers right now, way below 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 below right now. But what I'm curious about is when all of these votes get consolidated come November, when all the people who are looking for a more law and order candidate actually cast their votes, they're looking at former Republican turned independent Nathan Hochman. Maybe it could be a very interesting November.
Yeah. I mean, Debbie, you worked for Kamala Harris when she was district attorney here. You've worked on some of these, I think on both sides of some of these progressive DA campaigns. Mm-hmm. What do you make of this moment? I mean, do you feel like there is a backlash happening to some of these criminal justice reforms?
I personally think that when it comes down to a district attorney, really you're looking at a management job. And I think what you've seen with Gascon is kind of a backlash from when he came in. He made some initial decisions. He got some backlash from that. He didn't really have the support of the office. He didn't really like work to build that before he made some of his drastic changes. And so I think what you're seeing really is more of a backlash on his management style than anything else.
Yeah, in fact, you got 3 of his deputies running
against him.
Yeah. I mean, but as we brought up Gil Duran, there's also some ballot measures here in San Francisco that are sort of moving, you know, away from police reform in particular. How do you see this moment? And what do you think Gascon would need to do to keep that seat?
Well, I think he's got to frame the case for why he's been succeeding and what he's been doing that's right. We did see with the Chase Boudin recall that voters still do have a lot of support for criminal justice reform, even though they went for the recall of Boudin. But we're also seeing a move now to really frame DAs as the problem. It didn't used to be that way 10, 15, 20 years ago. Now DAs are largely being blamed for anything that goes wrong anywhere. Today was a race in Austin, Texas, where all the billionaires were after a progressive young DA, blaming him for crime, saying crime had gone up, even though crime has gone down in Austin under his tenure. He's winning with 66% of the vote, despite Elon Musk calling for him to be overthrown. So I do think a lot of this is being politicized, and there's a lot of blame being created for DAs that didn't used to exist. They're getting largely the blame for anything that goes wrong. They're getting blamed for the things that are a mayor's or a governor's responsibility. And so I think we're going to see that continue. There's a real need by some to create this law and order mentality toward crime. So won't stop.
Right, and the pendulum, it swings in different directions depending on the year. You've been listening to live election coverage from the California Newsroom. I'm Marisa Lagos in San Francisco. Well, let's stick with some local races, Scott. How are things looking in San Francisco? We're, you know, in the same sort of vein, I think, of concern about crime and public safety. You had some groups, mostly funded by tech and other business interests, run a couple folks to challenge incumbent judges here.
That's right. There was one judge appointed by Gavin Newsom, another by Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Michael Begert, who was appointed. He's now actually in charge of the care courts in San Francisco. He seems to be doing quite well tonight. He's got about 59% yes against his challenger, Chip Zecker. And then Patrick Thompson, who is Black, gay, Harvard graduate. The incumbent judge has got 52% yes to the challenger, Gene Roland, with about 48%. So too close to call there. But some other ballot measures that were promoted by the mayor, London Breed, who's facing a very tough reelection in the fall, seem to be doing well. Proposition C, which was put on the ballot to basically facilitate, provide a tax incentive to convert commercial buildings downtown to residential, that one's doing well with 55% yes. Also, Proposition E, put on the ballot again by the mayor, which would change police policies, kind of make go backwards to what policies were in terms of police chases and make it easier to put up surveillance cameras, that kind of thing. Voters seem to be taking to that. It's about 63% yes tonight.
We should say these returns are early. We only have about 83,000 ballots in. So, strength of these ballot measures is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and you know, also the early returns, you know, they tended to be a little more conservative and older. We'll see how it all shakes out. And then also Proposition F, also put on the ballot by the mayor, which would require drug screening for people, some adults who get public benefits. That one has 65% yes. So again, if that holds, that's a big if, but if it does, that the mayor is going to say that she's in sync with the voters.
Yeah, interesting too that the judges aren't doing well, because a lot of money was spent on, you know, Breed's side for these ballot measures by a couple of outside PACs, like I said, that were really funded by big tech money, Gil. What do you make of that split between so far pretty overwhelming support for her measures, but then the judges maybe not?
Well, I think San Francisco voters know better than to let the billionaires start buying the judges. That's no good. And I think I've seen in poll after poll in my own time in politics, people do not like it when they get an indication that someone with money thinks they can just buy themselves a whole swath of power in that way. I think the measures are different. Voters have been sold a very simple story. There are simple solutions. Let's see if it works. I doubt it.
Yeah, they seem like they might have been written based on polling, because they're pretty kind of random bucket of a
campaign
policy
stunts.
Proposals. You've been listening to live election coverage from the California Newsroom. I am Marisa Lagos with Scott Schaefer here at KQED in San Francisco, and Austin Cross with LAist in Los Angeles, as well as a slew of amazing guests. Stay tuned for more election coverage from NPR and the California Newsroom. Live coverage of California's primary election from the California Newsroom. I'm Marisa Lagos with Scott Schaefer here at KQED and Austin Cross with LAist in Los Angeles. We are getting more clarity tonight, this election night. Steve Garvey, the Republican former Dodgers first baseman, will move on to a runoff against Democratic Representative Adam Schiff in the U.S. Senate seat long held by Dianne Feinstein. And just a few minutes ago, Steve Garvey spoke at his party in Palm Desert. Let's hear what he had to say.
Keep in mind, this is the first game of a doubleheader. So keep the evening of November 5th open, as we will celebrate again. I congratulate Congressman Schiff for joining me in the general election, and recognize Congresswomen Porter and Lee for being in the arena and fighting for their beliefs.
And that, with that, sets up a long road to November with a lot of baseball metaphors ahead. Scott, you know, Garvey is new to politics. He announced late. He really benefited from a lot of money spent by Adam Schiff running ads sort of on his behalf in the hopes of this. I mean, what does this race look like to you moving forward?
Well, there was a Berkeley IGS poll just last week, which pitted the two of them together, and Schiff started off in that poll with a 15% advantage. So, you know, it's an uphill climb for any Republican running for statewide office. It's been, you know, since 2006 when Arnold Schwarzenegger and Steve Poizner won statewide. We haven't had a Republican win. And, you know, Garvey, although he has a certain, you know, nostalgia with his baseball career with the Dodgers and the Padres, that may appeal and will appeal to people. Obviously, it appealed to people tonight. You know, I think you have to figure that just the voter registration numbers and Schiff's name ID, the fact that Trump is going to be on the ballot, every time Trump's name is mentioned, it's good for Schiff, and probably not so great for Steve Garvey.
Yeah, well, let's bring in someone who can talk about all of that. That's Jessica Patterson. She is chairwoman of the California Republican Party. She joins us from Los Angeles. Hey, Jessica.
Hey, Marisa. Hey, Scott. Great to be with you guys.
Well, thanks for joining us. Big night for Steve Garvey. You know, as Scott just said, it is an uphill battle ahead. What do you expect him to kind of lay out to voters in these coming months? Because he, as Scott said, you know, hasn't laid out a lot of policy positions and has really been reticent to talk about whether he wants to support former President Trump again.
Well, I think what you're going to see is a contrast. And I don't think that you would have seen that had it been two Democrats at the top of the ticket. And, you know, before I was chair, this was something that was a real possibility and happened actually often in the post-top two primary world. So since I've been chair, we've gotten a candidate across the finish line for every single one of our statewide elections. We're really excited that Steve Garvey will be there in November to go up against Adam Schiff. I think you're going to see the difference, right? We've seen for several months now, you know, Steve Garvey was included in all of those debates. You have three D.C. insiders that were talking about D.C. stuff. Steve Garvey's coming in and he's talking about things that none of them want to talk about because they caused a lot of the problems, whether it's championing soft on crime policies like Prop 47 and Prop 57 and AB 109.
But all due respect, Jessica, but do you think Steve Garvey really, like, knows, is in the weeds on that stuff? I mean, he couldn't even give an answer to a housing policy he wanted to change. Like, does he need to really bone up on policy to make that case to voters?
I think that he's connecting with voters because Democrats don't want to acknowledge the many problems that they have caused here in the Golden State. There's a reason why in the last 6 months, California Republicans have increased registration by over 100,000. And Democrats have lost registration over 68,000.
Yeah.
There's a reason.
I'm curious, you know, we're also watching some House races. There was some hand-wringing on the Democratic side, rather, in the Central Valley District, the David Valadao seat. But it is looking like Rudy Salas may be making this a Democrat on Republican race. That was very tight in the last cycle between the same two candidates. What do you think Valadao is going to do to try to win that again?
I think he's going to continue to be Congressman David Valadao. He's such a great voice for the Valley. We absolutely already have the book on how to beat Rudy Salas. And, you know, if it ended up being Hurtado, we could have beat her, too. You know, she only won her Senate seat by about 13 votes.
Yeah.
So I'm excited that David Valadao is going to be there again. There's no one better. This is a seat that we won when the registration was D-plus advantage of 17.5. It's now a D-plus 16 district. So we feel good about it. And always when Congressman Valadao is running there, he speaks for the Valley.
All right. Before I let you go, we expect that this is going to be a slightly more conservative electorate, whiter, older than maybe the larger California electorate is. Do you feel that part of that might be not just that registration increase the GOP saw, but are Republicans warming to voting by mail after years of kind of being told that it was rigged by the former president? I know you guys have worked hard to try to get people to kind of embrace the system that the state is using.
We have been working on it, you know, since I was elected in 2019. This is something that we've pushed including in 2020, including in 2022. So this is something that we continue to push hard on. But we're also seeing, you know, these new registrations and voting for Republicans, the demographics change. We saw an increase in Latino votes for Mike Garcia by 18 points from 2020 to 2022, for David Valadao by 16 points. So we're working in a lot of different communities that had been neglected by our party over the years, and we're going to continue to grow with the changing demographics of California.
That is Jessica Patterson, chairwoman of the California GOP. Jessica, always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks, guys.
All right. And Austin Cross at LAist, what do you know down there? How are things going in those congressional races and the DA race you're watching?
Well, a big one I'm watching right now is the 40th Congressional District. That's in the OC. Young Kim looks like has surpassed 51% of the vote. So it looks like Young Kim's going to be all right there. And looks like possibly Joe Kerr, Democrat, is going to go along in that race. That was seen as a race that could go either way right now. The vote totals are extremely close, so looking like a very close November on that one. Also looking, honestly, at Adam Schiff's seat that he is vacating now as he makes his run for Senate. Laura Friedman has taken a large lead there with almost 29 percent of the vote as of about 2 minutes ago, just 47% of the votes counted. You asked about DA. We're still looking at results from about 2 minutes ago on that. Nathan Hochman still standing in second place next to George Gascon. Gascon with about 23% to Hochman's 18%.
That could take a while to sort out, but
it's going
to
take a minute.
You know, we left you a little bit ago talking about that Los Angeles City Council race. Kevin DeLeon caught up in that scandal over racist tapes. Folks caught on tape saying racist things. He is leading that pack, about 29% so far.
Right?
Is that surprising to you?
You know, it's, how do I think about this? Because I've talked to Kevin DeLeon a bunch at this point, and I knew that he was going to hold on. Even after that tape scandal broke, and he wasn't doing any press interviews. I think his first press interview was in Spanish, and that was kind of his way of getting back into the conversation, getting back into the world after people really camped outside of his house telling him to resign. That said, though, it was going to always be very hard. I think there was a recall effort that just didn't make it. It was going to be very hard when so many of the people who were against his candidacy, against his even being on the city council, weren't in his district. So frankly, those opinions just didn't really count quite as much. I've also seen some reports he spent a lot of money on mailers. He's been getting out there really trying to use a madman term. If you don't like what people are saying, change the conversation. I think he even used his kid on one of the campaign mailers, and it said, "My dad isn't perfect, but he'll do a great job for you." Something along those lines, right?
So you've got to get the Hollywood references in, our friends at LAist there.
Had to do it. That's what we do here. But sitting at 29% right now, still early, but he could still make it to the dance in November.
All right. We want to go now to the Central Valley, where Carrie Klein, a reporter at KVPR, one of our partner stations, has been following that Valadao race. This is Congressional District 22. Hey, Carrie.
Hi, Marisa.
So it is looking like this could end up being a rematch between Representative Valadao and former Assemblyman Rudy Salas. What is the mood there, and what are you seeing in these returns?
You know, I mean, I think that you're right in that Valadao is the clear front runner, is almost certainly going to be advancing to the general. But I don't know that it is clear who the second place is right now. I mean, right now, there's so few votes that have been counted.
Yeah.
So it's still really anyone's game. But at about 11% precincts reporting, Rudy Salas and also another conservative Republican, Chris Mathis, they're about neck and neck. So and that, of course, is what a lot of Democratic strategists and the kind of the state Democratic establishment had feared, is that the Democrats wouldn't actually get enough votes to actually advance at all to the general, and then we'd have two Republicans to choose from. Yeah. In this district that actually sort of leans Democratic.
I mean, I was down there during the last cycle. It was just blanketing the airwaves, you know, ads for both Salas and Valadao. Very intense race there. Do you gather that people have been as engaged in this primary? I think just generally we're not seeing a lot of excitement at this primary election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's about what we've been able to tell here as well. It's kind of hard to tell how people have been engaged. And I think a lot of the criticism for Rudy Salas is that, at least in the previous election, because, of course, Salas and Valadao were the front runners in the 2022 midterms, a lot of the criticism then for Salas in particular was that his ground game just wasn't strong enough because, you know, there is a Democratic preference, voter preference here in this district, and that just didn't show up at the polls. Of course, there was this low voter turnout all around, and I think we're seeing that we're likely to have a reprise of that here with this election.
All right. That's Carrie Klein, reporter at KVPR in the Central Valley. Thanks so much, Carrie.
Yeah, thanks, Marisa.
And I think we're going to get Melanie Mason from Politico here in a second, Scott, down at the Katie Porter Party. But before we do that, let's talk about another congressional seat, open seat here in the Bay Area. This is Anna Eshoo's seat in the South Bay. Real big cast of Democrats running for that. How's it looking?
Yeah, this is a solid Democratic seat. No chance of Republicans flipping it. But so far, with about 72% of the precincts reporting, the former mayor of San Jose, Sam Liccardo, is in first with about 23%. Followed pretty closely by Joe Simidian, the Santa Clara County supervisor, very well known down there. He's run for state and local offices with 19%. And then the assemblyman, Evan Lowe, with 16%. So, you know, we can't say this too often. There are many, many, many ballots still to count. There was some thought that maybe Peter Dixon, this former Marine who's spent $2 million down there, unknown, a tech guy spending a lot of his own money on television ads, but he's, way down, about less than 8% of the vote. So he is not going to make the top two, most likely.
Debbie, any thoughts on that race?
You know, it's been really fascinating. We were talking about that first ad, which they were saying was the first ad that really AI was being used. I thought it was an excellent, excellent ad. And he did have some donor support. As you mentioned, Scott, he put in some of his own money. I'm actually surprised Lowe didn't do better. It hasn't. I know there's so many votes yet to be counted. But, you know, he's been in the state legislature quite popular. I'm a little surprised.
Well, and, you know, this is another seat that has been held by a woman for a very long time, Anna Eshoo, retiring after over 30 years. And like Jackie Speier in a neighboring district who retired and was replaced by Kevin Mullen, it looks very likely that that seat is going to flip, not from blue to red, but from female to male. So the delegation gender balance is really changing.
Well, speaking of females being shut out, you know, we know that the U.S. Senate race will be between Schiff and Garvey now. Melanie Mason is down at Katie Porter's party in Orange County. From Politico, Melanie, what's the mood?
I think that the mood is, I wouldn't quite say somber, but I think that there's definitely a lot of wistfulness. I mean, I talked to a lot of people who attended, particularly a lot of women who brought up this representation. I think that it really is hitting home that California will not have a woman senator, which for the first time in decades. And it's something that even Congressman Porter alluded to in her speech. She had sort of said, you know, as a woman, I was told, you know, somebody close to me once said that if you sit around and wait for your turn, you're never going to get it. And I found that by and large, that's true. So I think that there is a real resonance. A lot of the people who are here have been volunteers for Porter campaigns, not just in the Senate race, but in past House campaigns, too. So there's a lot of very deeply felt personal connections among the crowd tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, Porter had hoped to claim that second place spot, but you did have Barbara Lee probably kind of splitting the progressive vote. Any talk of that down there? Oh, give me one second. You've been listening to live election coverage from the California Newsroom. I'm Marisa Lagos in San Francisco. And sorry, Melanie, you were talking about Barbara Lee and Katie Porter potentially kind of splitting the progressive vote in this race.
It's interesting because I actually have not heard tons of talk about Congresswoman Lee and this idea of the vote splitting, but there's been quite a lot of frustration I've heard voiced about Congressman Adam Schiff and the money that he spent boosting Steve Garvey. I think that there is a sense that Garvey sort of rode Schiff's coattails in the type of advertising that we saw over these last couple of weeks. And there's palpable frustration, not just among her supporters, but Porter herself. I mean, she spoke about this in her remarks. She didn't name Schiff by name, but she did mention her opponent, who spent more on elevating the Republican than on promoting his own campaign. And that got a few boos in the crowd.
All right. That's Melanie Mason from Politico. Thanks for calling in, Mel.
No problem.
With some Shakira in the background.
Yeah, we got that. And I'm wondering, I mean, Debbie Mislow, we've been talking a lot about female representation. Could this hurt Schiff at all? Or could this hurt Democrats to not have two Democrats in that race? I know, you know, Scott said earlier, well, on the other hand, they won't have to spend a bunch of money in Save California. But, you know, it's going to matter this fall because Democrats aren't that excited about Joe Biden.
I think Democrats will come out, though, to, you know, cast their votes against Donald Trump. And I do think that Schiff will, you know, garner some enthusiasm. He has some time here, you know, of course, leading into November to continue his ad blitz and making sure that, you know, voters have that sense of enthusiasm. I also, it's an interesting point that you raised, Scott. It's true about the gender shifting on the delegation. You know, Katie Porter was one of the only moms. You know, I hate to lose her in Congress. And so, you know, that's one thing of these two, you know, men being in the general.
And that's another seat that's likely to flip from having had a woman there to having a man.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely. If the results hold.
Right.
All right. 30-second skill. What are you going to be watching for moving out of this election?
Well, I think we got to see whether here in San Francisco these ballot measures do anything to change London Breed's fate.
Yeah.
To change London Breed's fate. I don't know that I think it may be too late to save that with these ballot measures. And I think that's going to be the main thing to watch, whether the
big mayor's
this
race coming
adds
here
up to anything in November. If this was the answer, then why wasn't it proposed any time in the past 6 years while she was mayor?
All right. That is Gil Duran, independent journalist and co-founder of the Frame Lab newsletter with George Lakoff. Thanks for being here. Also had Debbie Mislow, communications consultant who runs her own firm, Mislow Strategies. Really appreciate you, Debbie.
Thank you, Marissa. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. And that is going to do it for our special coverage of California's primary election.
Our engineer was Christopher Beal. Our director was Dan Zoll. And our producer was Izzy Bloom.
Guy Marzorati and Molly Solomon helped coordinate and produce this coverage with assistance from Tony Marcona from the California Newsroom. Thanks especially to the reporters and journalists from across the state to contributing to this evening's coverage.
And for more of our California election coverage, subscribe to the Political Breakdown podcast. That'll do it for tonight. I'm Scott Schaefer from KQED.
And I'm Austin Cross at LAist. Tune into your local NPR station in the morning for updates and ongoing election coverage.
This special was produced by the California Newsroom. It's a collaboration of California's radio, public radio stations, NPR and CalMatters. I'm Marisa Lagos. Good night.